I'm going to start, actually, with a question while this is loading. My name is Beth Jacob. I'm the project director of a new initiative funded by the de Beaumont Foundation called City Health. So I can't read any of your name tags, and also I'm going to forgive me for wandering away from the podium. It doesn't do a lot for staff who ask people like this. Thank you. So I'd like to start with a question. I can't read anyone's name tags. I'm going to start with you. Can you tell us where you live? Minnesota.
Where in Minnesota do you live?
St. Peter.
St. Peter.
Tell me three things about your community
that
you like.
I like that it has a healthy downtown. It's got a great coffee shop. Mm-hmm. And that I know everybody when I walk down the street.
I'm going to pick on someone.
Oh.
Okay. I'm
in Baltimore, and I love the community in Baltimore. People are not going to be happy with me, but I love the fact that we have a great football team that might be struggling this year, but I like the community that provides, and I like the fact that we are great. We have a bit of a chip on our shoulder, but we are proud of that.
One
I live in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I'm actually from Denver, so there's a lot of things I love about Denver and don't love about Philadelphia. Philadelphia has a lot more diversity. And I've only been in Philadelphia for a year, so that's the one thing I like so far.
So where we live, it gives us a sense of community, gives us places to eat, gives us community institutions, places matter to so many things about the way we live our lives. So the idea that places matter is very fundamental to what I'm about to talk to you about. And I would say that there is one other piece that goes into a lot of what any of you would say if I were to ask you this question, if you were to think about the things that matter to you about where you live. And that is that policies matter. Because if you think about the place that you live, it is not just that there is a general sense of community, or that there are restaurants you like to go to, schools you want to send your kids, or don't want to send your kids, as the case may be. But all of these things are created by the policy environment in which you live as well. So there are choices that people make, personal choices, and those matter too. And these three pieces are all deeply interconnected and are at the heart of the project that I'm about to talk to you about. So,
can I switch back? Thank you. City Health. The City Health Project, this doesn't actually come in size 10 petite. The City Health Project set out to ask two questions. The first question is, what if we could create a blueprint? We know that policies matter in the places we live. What if we could create a blueprint for people who lead our cities to give them an idea of what policies they could have in place that have the best chances of making life good for people in cities, of making people's well-being a good possibility, of people making productivity and health a real possibility for everyone who lives there. Now, if we had that policy blueprint, that would be great, right? I mean, if we had, let's say, 10 or 15 policies that we could give to policymakers and they could look at those and say, yeah, all right, great, that would be a terrific addition for most city decision makers. But what if we could go one step further? What if we could then take that blueprint and analyze across the 40 largest cities in the United States and ask ourselves, what do they look like? What do they have on the books of these 10 or 15 policies? And how do they stack up? If we could take all of that information and give it to decision makers so that they could actually think critically about what type of life they are offering to all of the people in the cities that they are administering. So those are the two overarching questions that we are asking ourselves with this project. They're modest. We think we can pull it off, but it's going to take a lot of work. So I want to tell you a little bit about how we're going to approach it. Now, the first question that I get asked a lot is, why cities? Why aren't you taking on states? There are lots of ways that people organize themselves. There's lots of layers of government. If you want to talk about policy, why not state policy? Why not federal policy? Why not county policy? Why cities? So we know place matters to health, right? We know that all change starts local. And we know that the neighborhoods that we live in have a deep influence on our ability to live well or not live well, as the case may be. Now, the other reason that we decided to take on cities as our metric is that if you look across the country right now, cities are kind of amazing. As Shelley said so poetically, cities are kind of badass. There are amazing incubations happening right now in terms of innovation, from paid sick leave to smoking bans to all kinds of ways that cities and city decision makers are thinking critically about the type of life that they can provide to the people who live there. Cities are tackling those problems often because they have to. If you look at different levels of government, and I happen to live in Washington, D.C., so I see this firsthand in my backyard all the time, there's a tiny little bit of gridlock happening in some of the other layers of government. And so cities often have to solve these problems because they have no other alternative. Now, the other reason why we realize that cities are an incredibly important place to look is that there's amazing data out there right now. Our friends at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, America's Health, there are all kinds of awesome information out there about metrics and measurements and indicators so that we know where people are struggling. We know the gaps. We know that your zip code can matter in terms of your ability to live well or not live well. The problem that city decision makers are telling us is we know those data. We know the people who live in our cities, but we don't always know what to do with that information. We can't change everybody who lives in our city magically. We're not going to transplant certain parts of our population elsewhere. What can we do with the tools we have to make life better? And we also see policies in some ways as the great equalizer. So whether you live in a city with a significant population of people living in poverty, huge numbers of properties that have been abandoned, or whether you're in a city that's facing a housing crunch for affordability because there you have all of this gentrification, there is that you still have the same shot at putting in smart policies for people in a way that can make it matter. So we asked ourselves, how do we do this, right? How can we help cities get healthier? Now, the first thing, of course, is to figure out, well, what are the ingredients we're working with? Now, here in this room, we call these the social determinants of health. If we use those terms with policymakers, their eyes would glaze over and we'd lose the conversation. So we try not to use that outside of this room. But we think about what are those core pieces: education, employment, income, housing, public safety, violence, mental health. We know what those indicators are. We know what those core elements are. So what are those ingredients? And then we crosswalk them and we think about what are cities good at? What are cities' jurisdictions? Cities are unique in what they control. They are not states, they are not the federal government, they're also not counties. So if we crosswalk those things, and we can start thinking about what are our policy opportunities. Finally, we also asked ourselves, and we've done some stakeholder research into this, what's on city leaders' minds? What are the problems that they're trying to solve? So that we can tap into that interest, and we can give them solutions that will help them start tackling these problems. Now, as we start looking for the policy solutions that we are going to put onto this list, our great list, right? How do we do it? How do we find these solutions that we can sell as workable? So the first question we ask ourselves is there evidence that this actually matters to health? right? There are all kinds of different things out there. And by taking a social determinants frame, we can think about the problem of health pretty broadly, but do we actually have evidence that this is going to move the dial in terms of people's well-being? Now, we're also asking ourselves, as we start thinking about these solutions, what's the cost? Because if you're trying to market solutions to city policymakers, this is the first one they're going to ask you. They'd love it if there's a return on investment. They'd especially love it if that return is going to come during their term. So that's always helpful. That's a lot harder for those of us in public health to be able to produce that. So short-term returns are really nice to be able to offer. And lastly, can you give them something that is going to improve the marketability of their cities? City decision makers are thinking a lot about how they can make them market themselves as more productive and more appealing. So the other questions we ask ourselves: Do they address disparities? Do they help increase the equity for populations, especially those who are at a disadvantage? And lastly, are they politically feasible? Because we're going to get asked that question a lot. And of course, how tough are they to implement? Three roadblocks, and then I'm going to give you an example. All right? So when we start talking about these solutions, do city decision makers actually get that this is relevant to health? When you start talking to them about public safety or housing, do they get that that's a health issue? One of the things that we are tackling is to start answering that question for them and showing them that there is evidence that this actually can help improve people's health and well-being. Preemption is a huge one at the city level, because often we can come up with really smart ideas that either the state or the federal government doesn't really like a city to do so much. And lastly, is this something that is ready? Is the public going to be willing to take this on? You know, you think about something like a soda tax in New York. Didn't work out so well initially. So a quick test case for all of you. As we think about education, right, we know education matters. It's a big one in the social determinants. And we want to have something in our education bucket for our policy solution. So as we started thinking about where is there data that education, that in terms of an education intervention that matters to health, one of the best ones that we could come up with is high-quality pre-K. We know that 90% of a child's brain is developed by the age of 5, so those early years are super important. And we know that there's a really strong health case to be made in terms of those social determinants. A high-quality early education is going to better prepare a child to succeed later on in school. Some of the long-term evaluations show that a child is going to go on and succeed later in school. There's going to be reduced referrals for special education. So there's all kinds of really good data that we can offer in terms of what a high-quality pre-K can do for kids to improve their opportunities for health. But what can cities do? Well, one of the things that we will be doing is actually analyzing across the 40 big cities, what are cities doing? We know there are cities who have standalone pre-K programs. We know there are some cities who are implementing state programs. But this is a complicated question in terms of whether or not cities are going to be funding this on their own, raising outside money, or whether this is something they feel that they can take on at all. One of the biggest roadblocks that we know city decision makers will come back at us with is, wow, that's really expensive. You know, it sounds awesome, but there's no way that we can afford this. So how on earth could we do this, even though, you know, it's got a nice sounding feel to it, but where are we going to raise the funds? How can you show me in my city decision maker term that this is going to be something that's actually feasible? And so it'll be important for us to be able to show them those short-term returns, as well as cases of cities who have actually made it work, and why. So how we can help cities find a way forward, this will be where our 40 city data comes in, where we can show them across the cities who's doing it, The organization who's going to help us do the analysis is the National Institute for Early Education Research. They are the ones that, for anyone who's in the early education field, has kind of set the bar for quality. And so they have a bunch of indicators that have established what quality early education looks like, and we'll be able to hold up that mirror for city decision makers to say, here's what actually matters in early education, here's what you have or don't have. And that will hopefully help them understand how they can map a way forward if this is something that they end up deciding to move forward to do. So I'm going to stop there for questions, and then I have one last thing.